Well, here we are again. Thanks for joining. We've got a really interesting guest here on Point today, Mr. Jonathan Jones from CBRE. Really excited because he's a young and aspiring facade engineer, and I've worked with him on a few jobs now, and he's really impressed me. So I'm looking to learn some real insights, and hopefully you will get some as well. Welcome, Jonathan.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're, you know, staying with the Point theme. Where's the potential, would you say, for, you know, like if we're just talking radical and we say, like, let's change the industry, where's the biggest potential?
For who? Clients or for the industry, contractors or designers or end tenants?
Let's be generous and just think about the people that own the buildings, because they're the one that have the biggest vested interest. So let's help them out. So where's the biggest potential that we see from our vantage point?
So I think, you know, for asset owners, you know, building owners, large portfolio managers and things, you know, I think the technology is hopefully really going to streamline that management process for their portfolio of buildings, right? You know, like you said, buildings are getting smart, even smarter than they already are. You know, BMS, building management systems, will eventually be able to manage the building on its own. You know, will you need FMs? Yes, you probably still need someone on the ground, you know, but do you need people walking around the building checking your systems regularly, or robots doing it? I don't know. But this allows, I suppose, building managers to see the whole portfolio through one portal, one interface. We've done some things like this at CBRE where, you know, you've surveys or various different services we've carried out for clients, and then put all that information into one portal so they can quickly see all their buildings, you know, all the information, all the costs, everything in one place. And that's them to, like, you know, really manage their budget, manage their time and targeted maintenance, you know, as opposed to emails on emails, talking to them, trying to get things sorted out. So I think that for clients is going to be the biggest thing, you know, massive cost saver in the, you know, streamlining of resources, so to speak, which is a, you know.
So the one thing that I'm sort of seeing clients ask more is, you know, where is the hockey stick of, you know, it's breaking down, it's holding, it's breaking down, and then all of a sudden it's like, very slowly and then very quickly everything starts breaking out again. And I think that's from what we're seeing is that the more efficient a building is and the more it's maintained, the longer its lifespan is. But, you know, some of the, like, you're working and we're working on iconic buildings, and we're also working with them for years, and you just think, you know, it's almost, you have a sense of responsibility to keep them going rather than, you know, there's always that sort of faction that says, no, just tear them down, put something new in. That, you know, when you look at London, and I look at data, so I logged into a recent system with CoStar that gives me access to more or less everything that's happening in the UK and America. And when I look at I thought there was a small niche of buildings which are 25 years and over. And just in the square mile, there's 11,000 really good quality buildings that are over the 25-year-old threshold. And I've had this conversation many times now with especially in the city, you know, like when they were designed, as you said, 70s, 80s, the landscape was very different. And the weather patterns through the sort of the macro stuff, but the micro weather patterns of changing, because if you go down, say, Bishopsgate, you know, like some of those huge buildings that have gone up are now funneling all the way down. And it's like long corridors, and they must have an effect and an impact on, you know, capping systems or gasketry or louvers or copings. Even, you know, I'm seeing a lot of coping. You know, when we get these big weathers come through, not tornadoes, but, you know, big gusts that can whip through. I mean, we're seeing gusts now 50, 60 as through London as a sort of, you know, which it was never heard of 5, 6 years ago.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point. I mean, we did some work last year over in the US in inspecting some different types of buildings, some like large industrial sites and things. Some of those were located in kind of the, let me get my geography right, central to kind of Southeast America or Central America, where, you know, tornadoes do happen and hurricanes. And, you know, looking at the wind loading, they're very interesting over in the United States. They have different codes depending on which state and where it was designed and things like this. But looking how they were designed originally to modern standards and how the wind and like tornadoes have been, you know, designed in, it's really interesting. And, you know, your point on funneling kind of in London, you know, funneling is included in the wind loading calculations. So any new buildings that are built will be taken into this account. You know, much older buildings might not have, and if the you know, the environment is changing around them, you know, do those design needs to be revisited? It's an interesting question, you know, and people are starting to look at this. Like I said, we've done some work for clients where we have reviewed that, but it's very design orientated, you know, and kind of interestingly, the drivers mostly come from insurance, so right, kind of. Who's going to pay if it gets damaged? Who's going to look after it and things like that?
I'm surprised that insurance aren't more. I mean, everyone's insurance premiums have gone through the roof, you know. And I mean, we've started to do more of this sort of non-combustible and reclad work, which we've got involved in before together. But as a result, push it, you know, our premiums have gone mad, and yet I don't see much. From the insurance people taking an interest saying, okay, well, if you mitigate, if you do this, then your insurance premiums could come down. Do you ever get involved in any of those conversations?
So we have some projects on the go where, you know, there is remedials required because, you know, fire being one of the main drivers and things like that. And insurance is part of that conversation in terms of, you know, the work we're doing, how that affects the insurance premiums. You know, if we do A or if we do B, both are compliant with the regulations. Perhaps A is a further step than the regulations. Is that what the insurance wants, or are they happy with B, which meets the regulations? Which is, you know, an interesting conversation where you already have, you know, a set of rules or regulations, if you like, that, you know, govern what is safe and what isn't. And then you have an insurance provider saying, no, we want more. Mm. We need that. We need more than what you're only doing. This would be better and we can lower your premiums even further. You know, it's a really, before moving to CBRE, knew nothing about this, you know? And, coming from the design world, this whole commercial real estate is a whole new part of the industry, which is, you know, really interesting for me. And very different to what I learned previously, I guess.
So you, because you were at Eckersley Callaghan.
Yeah, so my background, I studied in Cardiff University and then came to London, kind of fell into facade engineering, I think a lot of people do, and kind of worked at design firms at Eckersley Callaghan being one of them, and did contract for a bit for a main contractor, which was interesting and fun. I don't envy you guys. And then I've moved back into the consultancy life and join CBRE. So yeah, my background is really kind of early stage design, REBA stages kind of 2 through to 4, and then contractor monitoring in kind of 5. And now I'm a lot more involved in kind of, you know, operational stages and kind of end of life of buildings and remedials, you know, which is a completely different aspect. And all the conversations with, you know, the, as we said before, the big funds that own these buildings, they're quite different conversations than you have in the design stage. And interestingly, I think that's where a lot of problems maybe in buildings we see come from, that sort of disconnect between the design stages of a project, you know, contractor picks it up, and then, you know, the operational life and kind of all this design team, is they're kind of lost, you know, they're kind of gone. You know, the things like Golden Thread and BIM, and they're all trying to get pulled into the industry to, you know, I think help this process. Because for me, from my experience, that's kind of where I see things falling down, really.
I mean, that I think that's probably the biggest growth part of the industry, which is that end of life. I think working it backwards when 15686, when I, you know, that is part of the design process, and you know, that's where everyone says that's where you get your 60 years life and warranty, and no one ever revisits that calculation. No one ever says, right, okay, this is what we designed it to, it's now been built to that, give it to the operator and say make sure that the O&Ms and everything else are carried through. And it, and I think if they did, the quality of the buildings, you know, when they're maintained and operated, would be, you know, like they were number one, save money, and they would just last longer. And you know, feeding into that end of life built material banks, you know, I'm seeing, you know, I'm having conversations with recently, who I know hopefully will be a guest, Mr. Entwistle, and San Gaban are doing a lot with recycling glass, you know, decarbonisation. A lot of the people that are doing demolishing are bringing back some of that glass for colour, and it really does feel like a sort of recycling that's going on. But even before that, reusing what is already on the building and reportioning it to different parts of the building with just some, you know, most of the curtain wall systems are great, but the gaskets are gone. You know, after 25 years, they're just brittle and they're not doing their job. And I, part of my conversation with a lot of people is educating them, saying, look, you don't need to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Let's just do some changes. You know, glass in itself will last a long time, but the sealed unit and the makeup and, you know, the argon or whatever that's is gone out of it. And I know people like Arabs are getting involved in that whole that discussion as well, which is good to hear. So sort of saving the planet. Everyone talks about it, but there is Save the Planet in action. And I think actually our part of the industry, you know, because it is the skin of the building. So, you know, and talking to people about skin, you know, like you wouldn't treat your skin and just go into the blaring sun and all the elements with some kind of protection. You know, I've got vitiligo, so I have to be really, I'm really conscious of that. But and you wouldn't take your car, you wouldn't just drive your car to death. You'd have an MOT, you'd get it checked out, you'd get it regularly repaired. And it seems that the facade or the skin of the building is not really thought about.
Yeah.
You know, people are looking at M&Es and chillers and decarbon and degassing, but no one's thinking, actually, all my elements are coming out and all my energy is, you know, coming out of the building, and all the elements are affecting that facade. So, I think that will... I'm just seeing that discussion accelerating constantly, and I think we're in the space, and I think... You know, I know that that's what you guys are seeing on a regular basis as well.
Yeah, I mean, facades, your point on facades are always considered last, so to speak, or, you know, it's at the back of, you know, building managers and facility managers' minds and landlords' minds. I fully agree with, you know, we do see this a lot where the, like I said at the start, you know, the sort of the bare minimum is done to ensure the facade is still on the building and the building envelope performs. But in terms of, like you said, gaskets, when they start to fail and go brittle, you know, this does affect the performance. And unless the tenants in a building, particularly in offices, unless they, you know, noticeably feel an impact, you know, they're not going to address it. And what we find is, you know, with management contracts, when you have a multi-tenanted building or multi-let building, different companies on different levels, you know, the facade responsibility, the upkeep of that sits with the landlord. And can sometimes kind of go by the wayside, you know. And you've got that paired with a city like London. You've got a lot of complex buildings very close together. The access, as you well know, how to get to these locations, how to actually clean elements, how to maintain them, how to replace. You know, we've got some great fun projects with glass replacements on the go. How that actually functions is a really interesting one, and I think. You know, it is a frustration, I think, sometimes to feel, you know, especially because we're in facades, no one else seems to care.
Yeah.
It does feel like that. But I wonder how, you know, how do you engage with your clients and get them to think more about the facade?
What we're seeing is It's more, I used to sort of like go and prod and just say, you know, and just say, did you know, you know, you've got a crack in your facade? And they go, no, or, you know, whatever we saw. Or it'd be a window cleaner that says, I've told the client and he's not done anything about it, but I've started to see water come into the building. Mm. But actually, these days I'm seeing, because of the energy assessments, so we're getting called in saying, look, you know, we're spending X amount on energy. What can you do about it? And that's, I think, where I think the technology piece has assisted us, because you can't immediately, you know, a building that's 10,000 square meters, mm. you know, you're weeks on a building on BMUs or MUPEs. Whereas with a drone, you can do a heat map on it really quickly or relatively quickly. And the quality of the visuals are so good now. So that you can do desktop reviews after. If you marry that in with a hybrid or even sample hybrid of people up and touching it and doing a sort of tactile survey, I think that's really complementary. So that sort of seems to be driving for us, is people get a sense of, my God, my energy bills have gone through the roof. Mm. We know that we're getting condensation. We know that, you know, you can physically stand by the window and touch the panels or whatever, and it feels really cold, even though it's, you know, we're pumping it at 24 degrees. What can we do about it? That unveils various different things. You know, it's poorly insulated. You know, sometimes it might even find other things that people don't want to know about, mm-hmm. like fire breaks and things like that. But often, you know, when you have a good look around, there's moss, and that tells you there's water in the system. And if there's water in the system, your units are sitting in the system, which means, you know, you're accelerating its death rate.
Yeah.
So that's in answer to your question. We're being asked on a more regular basis, can you have a look at how can we improve the efficiency of the facade? And there's, you know, all the tools and tricks that we both know of what to do that. So you have to do an assessment first, I think. And I think that's it's no longer a hard sell to say, have a survey, have an asset condition, do an assessment. It's not just about doing air leakages, you know, to get it past the building control. Yeah. It's about how about regularly checking that type of thing, because there is such risk associated with it. I mean, you know, buildings that we don't need to mention, but there are constantly things falling off buildings in London as a result of bad maintenance. You know, it might be bimetallic corrosion that's, or, you know, whatever's going on in the building. So we're now actively saying to clients, look, let's start with a condition survey. And when it gets technical, then we can work, you know, comes, you know, people like yourselves and just say, like, this is what we found. Can you have oversight on that? You know, what would you recommend? Work with us, collaborate with us. Whereas before it used to be, everyone was very insular. Mm. You know, now I think when you get to and maybe it's just the size of building or maybe it's experience, but I think there's a lot of collaboration that's going on between energy assessors, people that are decarbonising, consultancies, people like us who are actually doing the work and sort of like bridging a little bit of expert experiential influence actually on the building, saying, well, look, you don't need a consultant for this. It's clear where it's coming in, and this is what you need to do. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, I mean, it is an interesting point. I think, you know, trying to engage with building managers and, you know, getting that initial survey, I think is quite key. And, you know, the use of modern technologies, you mentioned drones and things like that, I think that's the way we're seeing, because that allows us to, you know, bring down costs for, you know, bring down fees for the client, you know, improve health and safety. You know, if I'm not in a BMU, a building management unit, or in a cherry picker, you know, close up to the facade, instead there's a high definition camera on the ground taking, you know, thousands of images, which create a very high definition picture of an elevation. It's a far better way to, you know, get that initial survey and initial look at and try to identify, you know, high risk and problematic areas, which then we can engage further with. And, you know, no like I said, you know, facades always thought about last. So I think it's important to say, you know, yeah, maybe you don't have to do anything with your facade, but let's have a quick look for you and see where you might have problematic areas. And then we can bring in the right people, you know, whether you need more technical support from ourselves, whether you need contractors on board, you know, or whether you just, you know, you need someone to clean a thing. You know, it allows us to provide that initial guidance at a much better fee level and safer. So I'm, you know, I'm really interested with the technologies, the cameras. We had some really cool documentation sent over from a drone company for a building, you know, to do a full drone survey of a building. You know, the fee point was really, really attractive compared to what it would cost to pay, you know, someone like yourself or me to be in a cherry picker for months going over a building. And then the use of AI on the back of that to, you know, look at those pictures.
You still need us.
I give it 10 more years and they won't. Which is, you know, for me, it's a really good point. It's interesting, you know. Are we going to be replaced by AI? Mm. What do you think in AI?
I think it's something that, you know, like I was listening to...